Good morning, everybody. Welcome in. It's Friday. And we will get, it looks like we have a couple of folks who have joined us up on the stage. My long-lost friend, Coleman. Thanks for coming up, sir. Neil, good morning, as always. Hope to get some of you up here as well. But yeah, let me wish you a good morning and welcome you to Bitcoin Veteran Spaces number 239, where if you're just joining us, we talk about Bitcoin. My name is Bob Van Kirk. I'll be your host. I'm joined by our co-host, Coleman. And it's going to be a great day, guys. Friday, August 8th, 2025. And let's take a look at the time chain today. We are at Bitcoin block height 909,183, with the Bitcoin price hovering just about around $117,000, which means you can still pick up 854 sats for each US dollar. If you haven't gotten off zero yet, please, please consider doing so. Not financial advice. Yesterday we got to speak with Rob Warren from Bitcoin Park. If you missed that one, I think there were a lot of great themes besides, talking about the Imagine If Summit coming up in September. And so, yeah, if you missed it yesterday, please check that one out. Rob had a lot of great things to say besides just talking about the summit. If you guys are interested in that one, though, do check out bitcoinpark.com. Also, not to be outdone, our very own Bitcoin Veterans will be having their second annual summit November 10th and 11th. In Nashville, in coordination with Bitcoin Park, and they'll be hosting us. Day one will be the conference on Monday the 10th, and then on Veterans Day, there'll be a range day. So if you're looking to be firing some firearms and getting some training, that would be a great opportunity for that. If you want to get involved with that, looking for all kinds of folks to volunteer. They're accepting speakers, panel topics, all that stuff. Go to bitcoinveterans.org/summit2025 and get involved. It should be a great time. Nashville's pretty nice still, usually in November, although we can't promise the weather, but it should be a great time. So, all right, enough for announcements. Let's kick off the show by saying good morning once again to Neil and Coleman. Let's start with Coleman. How you doing this morning, sir?
Hey, guys, can you hear me?
Yes, you must be lifting heavy things again.
Always, Bob, always. Yeah, if it's too much background noise, just let me know. I'm happy to be up here.
Yeah, thanks for joining. Neil, good morning, sir. How are you today?
Good morning. Yeah, I'm doing really good. I'm actually pretty excited. I'm going to meet up with some other Bitcoin veterans today in real life for the first time. So that'll be a fun thing.
Perfect. Yeah, that's great. Always good to do things in real life for sure. I think I see some people who usually join us. I see AC. If you get a chance, please do come up. Today is Freedom Tech Friday or Free for All Friday. We can really talk about anything. It's been an eventful week. Lots of things going on. We've steered clear of a lot of the news this week. We could head there, or we can continue on other topics that we've been touching on this week. So really, guys, it is up to you. And if you're in the audience and would like to come up and chat with us, use that little microphone button in the bottom left. You can request to come up. We'll be nice to you, or at least try to be, as long as you don't shitcoin. This is a Bitcoin only show. Also, you can participate by hitting that little comment box in the purple pill down in the bottom right of your screen and type your comments, questions, snide remarks, and you can even put in a nice meme in there for us. All right. So maybe we kick it off with, well, again, you guys can take it anywhere you want, but Trump had a new executive order yesterday trying to push the markets to get Bitcoin into 401k plans. And I wonder, does this change anything in your guys' mind? And welcome to the stage as well, BFP. I didn't have the crickets ready. Does anybody know about this executive order? I can introduce it. Go ahead, Coleman.
I see just an observation. I see a lot of executive orders coming out of this administration without a lot of, I guess, legal backing on it. So yeah, it sounds really good in the short term, but when we're Bitcoin, we have a long-term time horizon. Really easy the next 3 years for someone to come with a stroke of a pen and change back all of these orders.
Yeah, so I think I heard what you said, Coleman. A little bit of background noise there, but yeah, it seems like these executive orders really are pointing us in a direction. Doesn't mean that they will stick around. So I think I caught that. Anybody else? Neil, thoughts on this? Does this move the needle at all? Does it give signal to the markets? BFP, any thoughts, either of you guys on this one?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know if it's that much signal. I mean, that's kind of stepping out of my lane in the more the economic stuff. But I mean, I would imagine that that's really, if it's going to do anything, if it is going to move the needle, it's going to be tapping into just like the passive, like people's passive investments, like all the, I mean, so like, I don't even know if that really, if you're getting indirect passive exposure because you're just buying some index or you're just buying some, you know, thing that has exposure, it's like you're not really learning anything about Bitcoin at all. So it might make the price, it might help the price go up, but I don't know if that helps us move the ball in terms of orange pilling people and getting families like on a Bitcoin standard.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. Passive inflows into Bitcoin would be probably one of the biggest things that we would see out of it. But I still think that an executive order doesn't force some of these 401k providers to allow that. So I don't know. I think it's we'll see. BFP, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I think it's going to help the housing market get off its rear end and get moving because it allows a lot of other stuff. If, you know, Bitcoin is just going to move by itself. I think Americans, we live in a bubble because we're hegemonically the captains, or we live on the top of the pyramid with our fiat currency, and even though they debase us, they debase everyone else worse. So I think when the world catches on to what's really going on, these velvet shackles, they're gonna wake up, and it's gonna be Bitcoin's gonna start moving real fast.
Yeah, it's an echo here. I got a phone call. Hang on, guys.
Yeah, I heard the echo that time, but I think the economics of it are going to be good for his whole plan to grow us out of the the debt, which is kind of absurd, but that's what Bessent and the administration has planned, is to grow us out of this debt spiral, which is literally impossible.
Yeah, it's funny because like the way you grow is by just further accelerating the debasement, essentially. The rock in the hard place.
Yeah, it's basically getting more and more liquidity into the system to where everyone's just, you know, got their foot. It's kind of like, everyone speeding down, the Autobahn. It's just everyone's got to go faster. And so we're just catapulting ourselves into a faster and faster economy, which makes all the prices go up and it makes our debt less valuable. It's like getting a more and more house so you can have a bigger and bigger mortgage. So the mortgage will get debased quicker. It's just, illogical thinking, but that's Keynesianism or Keynesianism, whatever you want to call it.
All right. I think I'm back, guys, with,
I like just saying it's retarded.
That works too. Yeah, we were trying to cover for you there, Bob, me and Neil. Did you leave again?
Yeah, no, I'm back. I do think that, you know, we've been playing around with this and talking about it kicking.
Am I the only one that can't hear Bob?
No, I can't hear him either.
Okay, I thought I was in a dead spot or something. Bob, we lost you again. He gone. This is some serious dead space. What were you going to say, Neil?
Oh, I was just going to say, I think I picked up your velvet chains reference. So
yeah, we're all, just getting, or I'm not really, but people are complacent with the status quo and it's changing right beneath their feet. It's shifting.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's something that ties back into kind of what we were talking about with this executive order is like I do think it does inject pain in different ways. Like, so even though they're trying to, you know, put some salve on one aspect of, you know, this economy coming apart at the seams, it's like, well, it doesn't alleviate the tension. It just shifts it somewhere else. So it's like, you know, there is a level of pain at which people will actually pay attention. So it's, you know, in some sense, you can think of it as even a good thing. Like they have to do something and that thing just further accelerates, you know, it just injects more and more force into the seam, and like it's going to be felt by people in different areas of their lives. It affects the common man a lot different than it does the Wall Street guy. But I mean, I don't know. I'm very bullish on people waking up. I mean, like that's, I want to orange pill people. I want to teach people about Bitcoin. And you know, so in some sense, like, the creation of more and more pain, the absurdity that the solutions, you know, as they keep raising the level of absurdity, you know, that is just, it's creating opportunity for us to, attack and get the message out.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's so everywhere, like universities or college. It's hilarious how the government has backstopped. It's like price controls on your university degree has pushed the price so high that just to go get a university indoctrination hat so you can go work in the licensed professions, you have to pay or go into debt and be a, you know, be enslaved by a government backstop debt. Just, you know, and it pushes the price up for everyone. So it's really absurd how, you know, price controls have been proven time and time again that they don't work. And that's, you know, you're muting the signal of supply and demand. And that's what, is everywhere. I mean, medical, you name it. It's just everywhere now.
Well, yeah. And with the college, the student loans, I mean, like, you can look at them as usurious. That's like a different side thing. But just like if you're coming at it from like a free market, like it's not a free market at all, because you basically tell all the young kids that they have to go to college if they want to have any chance at success. And then the government fully backs and guarantees basically all the loans, which, you know, it's like anytime you just inject that much you know, demand into a market, like the colleges, they understand what's going on. Like that's like, that just feeds the prices, that feeds like all the bloat comes from this like false demand that we've created and then enabled. So it's like, you know, if you returned just college back to just a free market where you had to go and, you know, fund it normally without some, you know, secondary program, government insured student loan. It's like, you know, maybe prices would, for a college education would be down. Maybe colleges actually would have to offer more value to their degrees. But when everything's paid for and you know that it's guaranteed and they can't escape it, it's just like, you don't have to worry about your product. You don't have to worry about anything, like who you let in. It's just like, you just take anybody. And that's why, I mean, college is, it's literally a joke. Just riffing.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where you try to convince people that, this isn't the case, right? That like, you should not be sending your kids to college. And like, that seems so foreign and so strange to some people. And it's like, well, that's the only way that my kids are ever going to have a future if they go to college. And it's like, I don't know. I have these discussions with my wife and I have a couple of sons in high school, and it's like, we need to beef up on, how to use AI and to think really long and hard about jobs that will be there. One of my sons is super like hands-on with stuff and just loves to, you know, get dirty and do all kinds of things. And it's like, while I didn't want to become a tradesman, like a plumber or something like that, I could see where that would be super fulfilling for him and he could actually get paid to do it. A lot of people don't want to do those jobs, but that is, probably better than going to a 4-year school for him to get, you know, into huge amounts of debt or expect me to pay for it. so I don't know. These are just things that we kind of, discuss in my household as we're evaluating the value for the money. Like, what are you getting out of it? And so, Neil, I saw your hand go up first, and then we'll go to BFP.
Yeah, this like just really ties back into the whole kind of idea of money. But like, how are you going to create value in the world? Like, that's the question. It's not like, it's not really so much like what if you just think like, oh, I just need to make money. Well, in this fiat world, making money is that tether from creating value has been severed. So making money isn't necessarily meaning you're creating any value. You know, that's why everybody goes into finance and just, I need to win trades. I need to get good at extracting from others, you know, in these speculative gambles. And it's like, okay, well, that's where everybody's pushing. But it's like, if you get back to basics, back to principles, and you have your kid and you're just like, how are you going to create value in the world? Like, if you can answer that question and pursue that, you'll be set. Like, it really doesn't matter what the answer is, because if you are creating value in the world, like, that's the stuff that you put into the money. That's the stuff that you're storing. That's the stuff that actually, actualizes your needs when you trade it back and forth between others. Like, you know, I really like focusing on the value and not just the stupid monetary units that, you know, all these games are associated with. Cause at the end of the day, the creation of value is real. When you make something, when you create something, when you provide a service, when you offer insight, when you can do like anything you're creating in the world, like you're going to be, you're going to be set. And it's like, I think that should be more so the message for, you know, what I'm trying to convey to my kids when they get old enough, you know, is just how are you adding value to the world?
Yeah. I truly believe that the tradesman, whether you're a plumber or you're framing houses or whatever you're doing, welding, that, well, let's just call them certificates of appreciation. So what you, you know, take in return for your value, hopefully it's Bitcoin for the people who figure it out. That gap is going to, the gap between what a lawyer makes and a tradesman is going to shrink, because people are going to realize if I store my certificates of appreciation, the value I create in this, then I'm going to catapult myself into a different category. So I think as it unwinds and more people adopt Bitcoin, you're going to see the tradesman, his star is going to rise as the lawyers shrinks, or the doctor, or, you know, people are going, it's going to level the playing field is what I'm saying.
Yeah. We also had TJ and Tomer join us. Tomer, I see your hand. Go ahead, sir. Thanks for coming up.
Hey, good morning, guys. I think, just to add to some reflections on what's been said so far, the whole determination of your identity that you build while you're young, when you decide what you're passionate about and what you're going to go to school to do, or what you're going to get trained to do, what you're going to start dedicating your time to, is a really, it becomes a really tall order and very challenging when you have a society where the value awarded to those things changes dramatically in your lifetime. So I'll give an example. Like, my oldest kid loved math, loves math, reads math textbooks for fun, did a degree in math and computer science, and finds himself now unemployed for the first time in their 4-year career so far, and having a really hard time finding a job that they want to do, because they're focused on building video games, and that's like a movie type industry where you go from job to job, like project to project, and all the projects seem to have been canceled in the last year. And when they were growing up, we never thought, when my kids were growing up, we never thought that this one would be the one to have a problem finding a job, because it seemed like computer programming would be endlessly short-staffed and increasing in demand. But in the same, like on a similar vein, sorry that I'm taking so long to make this point. In a similar vein, they're also suffering, like that whole generation. They're suffering from the good times make for weak men phenomenon, because during the good times, universities lend out money left, right, and center. They get endowments left, right, and center from people who were successful, and they get sloppy. And I think this was one of the points that was being made when I joined the spaces. And so what value the universities teach you to create and give back to the world can get quite diminished. And we went through this whole period, which I think we're still going through, but it maybe has peaked, where the universities are more about virtue signaling than value creation. And if you happen to spend your years in university and education and growing up during one of these periods where they made, where you were raised weak, it's very, very hard to have a sane view of the world where you can add value back in. Like, you did everything right by the metrics of the world. You did what everyone told you to do. You applied your mind in every way that was presented to you to challenge, and to create value. And then you find yourself in a world where your skills are not in demand. And I think that's a big problem right now. And it's probably going to continue to get bigger. And people talk a lot about AI and automation through robotics. And I think some of that stuff is coming. We're probably in that early stage of some overreaction to that. But there's no question that a lot of lives, a lot of minds have been wasted studying things that aren't of particularly high value. And many of those minds aren't aware that those things aren't of particularly high value because they were indoctrinated and told that they were of high value. And so we've got a real big problem on our hands added to the existing problems. I think it's very hard to figure out what to tell kids to do. I think it's very hard for kids to figure out what to do nowadays. So, you know, there may be, if everybody goes into the trades, there will be an oversupply of tradespeople. They say, why do we have 10 plumbers per cap, you know, per 100 people? It's too much. So we're really at a point in time where, I think what we haven't done is we haven't cashed in on, I'm sorry for ranting here. We haven't cashed in on all the productivity gains that we got. We kept the 40-hour work week in place. And we know that it's fake, that demand for it is fake. Like, many of the office jobs were bullshit jobs. When then we went to work at home for COVID, we realized we don't need to commute to work. And we realized we didn't even need to do much of the work. Most of us have been unproductive and not generating value. The whole middle management thing has been a make work exercise. And instead of harvesting those gains and saying, yeah, you know, people only need to work 5 hours a week or 3 hours a week because we have machines that are doing all the added work, we've tried to keep people busy. And the pretense of that has created a tremendous amount of fakery. And people have become skilled at lying about how busy they are, or how important their unimportant jobs are when they're not busy and their jobs aren't adding value, because we haven't figured out how to fairly distribute wealth and let people contribute what their actual value is and harvest the rest as profits and as free time. So there's like three or four really convoluted interrelated ideas in what I just said. I haven't presented a clear theory as to what the solution is, but I think a lot of it lies in being honest about harvesting the productivity gains that we actually get, rather than trying to continue to find ways to make tedious employment a lengthy part of our lives when it doesn't need to be.
Tomer,
I landed there.
I got two children about to be 19 and 18, boys, and I'm in the same boat. I don't know what to tell them. I always say, serve people in a way that makes them want to pay you. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah, and it's hard because, like, so there's very simple things that are answers to that. Like, I'll shovel driveways and mow the grass and help little old ladies cross the street. But that's not going to generate for them the kind of income, freedom, wealth, value, satisfaction that is their highest potential. You know, and what I've been telling young people lately, which isn't very precise or prescriptive, it's go with the flow, right? It's like, know what you want, like, set yourself some goals in terms of what you want. One kid I was talking to said he wanted to be married by the time he was 30 and wanted to have a good income. Another one told me that they loved working outdoors and just wanted to find a way to make it outdoors. And I'm not going to pretend to say, oh, well, then the job you should do is our landscape architecture or something like this. It is, know what you're aiming for and then go with the flow. And the reason is that's what creates manifestations that are flexible and dynamic. They're not foolproof, but you know, if you know what you're aiming for, then your subconscious is constantly on the lookout for saying, oh, this fits with that. That fits with this. And it doesn't have to be perfectly logical or perfectly deductive. You can go with the flow and things start to happen. And I know at the times in my life when I've been most distressed about dealing with, you know, my long-term future, it hasn't been trying to create a long-term future plan that's detailed, that's worked out for me. It's been doing what I want to do now and keeping an eye out for opportunities to expand it and improve upon it. But it's not all, like, if you're stressed, it's very hard to relax enough to go with the flow. So that's a little bit of the challenge. Take that stress off, especially if you're a father who can provide for his kids to go with the flow rather than to do something that they feel is responsible and like going to university and studying law, but something that they hate, just as an example. You know, if you can send them off to do something that's going with the flow, letting them live with you for longer or helping support them in some other ways, you may be doing them a bigger favor than paying, you know, helping pay to send them to school for a career that they don't really love or that might not be there by the time they graduate or shortly afterwards.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I'll let Neil go, but I did want to say, I think our kids on average are probably not taught goal setting. And so, you know, I really like that point to have people think about the long-term goal in mind. Like, what are we going after here? And then filling in the steps that it takes to get there. Like, kids don't know how to goal set. So Neil.
Yeah. The quick point I think on goal setting is it's not quantitative goals. It's qualitative goals, right? Like, you know, or it's directional stuff. It's not like I want to be making exactly this amount of money and hold that position and title at a Mag 7 company. 'Cause that's really hard to expect to even exist at the time that you set that goal for, because you just don't know what's going to exist. But if you follow your heart, you know, rather than follow what is presented to you by the leading minds of the world, I think that's a giant shift, right? Because it used to be very sound advice to say, what are the experts saying? Oh, the experts are saying you should have a degree in computer science and get involved in a startup. This is not necessarily anywhere near as valuable as it used to be. And it's not because the experts didn't see it coming. It came really fast. And now they're all experts about why it's not important, but too little too late, frankly.
Yeah. Neil, you have your hand up, sir. I think maybe, hopefully.
Yeah, I was just, Tomer said something about, you know, like the plumbers, like everybody can't be a plumber. If everybody goes into the plumbing, you know, then it's like that switches, you know, the dynamics completely around. And it's like, that's exactly right. Like when you're thinking about these strategies, it's about getting your principles right. And if you have the principles, you'll be able to apply them to find the particular solutions. And, you know, so when you see yourself as this, like, you know, what are my competencies? What am I good at? Like, what do I actually have? Like, my abilities. And when you're looking out at people, like, everybody has needs. And when you can see people's needs, you know, like, applying your potency, your abilities to service those needs, like, those are the principles and how that works. It's like, when you think about it that way, it kind of pushes this idea of, like, even what you kind of want, you know, kind of to the side, like, oh, I really wanted to be a barista, you know, or something like that. But it's like, and start my own coffee shop. It's like, well, if you're in an area where there's, you know, coffee shops on every corner and the market's completely flooded, it's like, you either have to, like, do something, you know, completely above it and beyond all of that to establish yourself there, or you have to move to a place that's not there, or you have to just kind of sacrifice that dream, that want of being this barista and seeing, well, what's not being serviced? Where's the opportunity? Like, and if you're seeking and looking for opportunities to insert yourself, like, I don't know, like that's the principles that you're trying to, you know, how do you analyze the situation? You each person's in their own unique circumstance and they have their own unique set of abilities and their, like, their experience, everything they're bringing to the table. They're like, truly an individual is this, you know, unique thing. And it's like, well, what can you offer the world? What can you do? And it's, you know, it's finding those opportunities and capitalizing on them. Like that's the thing that's going to do it. So if you say, oh, you just have to, if someone asks you a question like that and you hit them with a particular answer, I don't think you're really doing them that service, you know, cause even if it's right, it's right accidentally, you know. It's like, if you teach them how to think, how to analyze and look at themselves, self-reflect, and then, and project that out into the world, like it's making there a, when those things correspond, that's prosperity, you know. But if when they don't correspond and you're providing something that's just not needed, or you just suck, like you're not gonna have a good life. Like if I tried to be a painter, I would be the worst painter in the world. No one would buy anything and I would go hungry. Like it just, even if that was my dream, like it just, that's not the reality of me. Like I suck so bad at it. So it's just kind of a, I don't know. I like focusing on principles.
Yeah, it's a really great topic. And, you know, we have some posts in the, I don't know if it was the comments or where I was seeing it. Maybe one of our listeners. I don't know if you guys noticed this phenomenon of people throwing things onto the WNBA courts, but it's kind of wild. You know, we talk about the fourth turning and, you know, where we're at in that. And to have, I guess, what you might politely call sex toys being thrown out on a women's basketball, professional basketball court. I don't know.
I heard about that, Bob. And I thought to myself, who's bringing these things to the game? Like, what?
Well, you can bet on it too. You can bet on the color. Like, it's about as degen as you can get.
Crazy times we're living in.
So we laugh at these things, but I think, you know, if you're sober minded, you start thinking, you zoom out and you say, okay, sure, we can all laugh at that. But really, like, I mean, it brings up all sorts of questions about our society and where things are at and what we really, you know, what we're really doing. Like, I almost wonder if it's a psyop. I mean, the WNBA hasn't made money in its existence. It's completely subsidized by the NBA. And you almost wonder, like, how are these things getting through security? Right. And so, you know, it's funny to talk about, but again, like you start like peeling it back and you start wondering, like, is this Poly Market bet that someone could put on it? Is that manipulated? Is, you know, is this just to get more eyeballs on the WNBA? You know, if you bet on something like that, you're not betting on the game. You're not betting on the outcome. You're not betting on the amount of assists the star players are going to have. But this is a way to get viewership if you think about it. It's like, hey, I bet on this and now I'm actually interested to see like what color is going to get thrown out on the court. Like it is truly insanity when you really think about it. So I'll let other people chime in, but I think it's ridiculous, but it's also something like, why do we bring it up? I bring it up because, you know, it should make you think like what's really going on here. And, you know, maybe we don't have to spend a lot of time on it, but it is just another signal that things have really broken down in our society. And, so anyway, I've ranted enough, but Neil, I think your hand's up.
Oh, God.
Maybe not. Go ahead.
Sorry. My hand wasn't up, but, on your point, Bob, of, how do you sneak that in? I mean, unless they're doing cavity checks, I don't know.
I think, that's a good point. What Bob said is, you have to really take a step back and think about what's going on. And I think the same thing goes for Trump and Powell. like, is this like WWE? Are they really at odds with each other? Is this just the whole scheme to make it look like they're, you know, trying to fire you, fire me, and, you know, mommy and daddy are fighting, but in reality, it's planned. This is what they do. This is their, shtick as far as, you know, what they put out to the world. And the same thing goes with the WNBA and, these, green things.
So if you're an advertiser, you know, someone who is virtue signaling, cause you know, you're not really making money off of it, but you're virtue signaling, supporting the NBA, advertising to those fans. And now this is somewhat allowed to go on. Do you keep advertising? Like you're basically complicit, I would say, to some degree. And so I just wonder, like, all the stakeholders involved, do people, like, are people thinking about this? Are they excited about it? Are they, you know, what? I don't really know much about it, to be honest. I've just seen a bunch of memes and some commentary. Our friend Coleman posted, better question is, where are they hiding them to get past security? Neil kind of mentioned that. It's funny, but again, like, I don't think security cares. That's not what they're looking for, at least yet.
Yeah, I don't follow the WNBA, and I don't even follow the NBA that much anymore, sadly. But we got some real problems going on, and I feel like, you know, sports and all that. You know, I am in a fantasy football league coming up, but I do see the bread and circuses of it all. So it's a fourth. I do believe we're in the fourth turning. It's pretty evident to me.
So how do we fix it, guys? What do we, I think Coleman's back up here. Coleman, I know you're lifting heavy things, but have any fixes for this at all?
That's a step in the right direction.
Can you hear me?
Yep, you sound good. A little bit of background noise, but we can handle it for now.
I'll make it quick then. There's going to have to be some pain. Just like with anything, if you want to grow, you want to challenge yourself, you want to get out of a rut, there's going to be some type of pain. And we've created a society where we try to limit any exposure and any extended duration with pain. And until we can get over that as a society, and we can start pushing each other and start working through things instead of taking a pill, trying to take a shortcut, ask for a handout, there's no solution. And so from within, Bitcoin does fix this. It's the system outside the system.
Yeah, and I think our institutions want to continue propping things up. And so the big question is, how does it all happen, right? Like, how does the pain actually occur? And again, I'm not rooting it on. I think we can all step back and see it, that there has to be more pain. In order for people to wake up and realize, like, things are broken. Again, Neil, I'm having trouble with my spaces. I think I have your hand up, so I'll throw it over to you.
Yeah, just to answer your question, like, how do we move on? It's like these are. I mean, I laugh at it just because I don't know how else to do it. I mean, it's just, this is clown world. It's absurd. So just like, for me, kind of making light of it helps me just keep it in perspective that this is just an absurdity, and that absurdity is created from this just vacuum of meaning. You know, like, people's lives have been hollowed out. They don't mean anything. When work doesn't mean anything, they're not creating value. Like, that's really how we anchor ourselves in a meaning. Like, we anchor our lives with meaning through that in a lot of ways, whether that's, you know, working with your family and creating your family and your community, or, you know, your actual job. But, you know, it's just like, that's why that's degen culture. It's in all its different manifestations, whether it's throwing stuff on the court, or it's, you know, making meme coins, or, you know, like, I'm not surprised that there's not, you know, 10, you know, meme coins already about the WNBA's stuff. Like, you know, just like this meme culture of just degen is just, you know, people are searching for anything and everything just to attach any meaning to. And So it's like, well, what is that? Like going back to earlier, it's like, well, what do people need? They need meaning. Like that's the opportunity. The opportunity is that we have, you know, to attack this big opening is like, hey, if you can provide anybody with a sense of meaning and purpose in their life and talk to them about that and get them focusing on the right things, like that's going to resonate inside their soul. Like that will resonate in their heart, that'll resonate in their mind. And it's like, and that's essentially what Bitcoin is doing, you know, from this outside way. It's, you're not directly saying, hey, do you want to have a meaningful, purposeful life? But just that the tiniest ability to just save and protect the value that you create, preserves a sliver of your human dignity, and people feel it. And like when they feel that, that's what catches their eyes and gets them moving in that direction. So it's just like, you know, as you start, you know, actualizing that human, your potential human dignity and walking in a dignified manner, like that's what makes you stand up tall. That's what makes you move through life with, you know, I don't know, like I think that's the solution. Like that's at the end of the day, when the problem's solved, like everybody's doing that. It's like, so however it takes us as leaders to, you know, to not only to walk and carry ourselves in that dignified way, but to actually do so in a way that encourages others to follow suit. Like, you know, that's why I really like, you know, Bitcoin veterans, and it's like get on mission and being leaders. And it's like, you know, getting everybody to come together and start, you know, just rejecting, you got to reject the degen, you know, you can't do that. So I don't know. The answer is found in, I think, in our human dignity and acting accordingly.
Yeah, those are really good thoughts. Before the end of the episode, I did want to transition and talk a little bit about this new hack that I heard about yesterday from a gentleman who is in one of the meetups that I go to, and his brother actually works for Coinbase. And what we saw essentially is maybe, and this will probably come out, but he called me yesterday afternoon and shared it with me. He said, hey, I know you work with a lot of people and on self-custody and things like that, and just wanted to make you aware. Essentially, you know, we've all seen it, where email addresses get spoofed. But somehow these hackers have, infiltrated, at least figured out who some of the contacts are from Coinbase employees, and have been spoofing email addresses, sending them out and saying, you know, I think they're matching them up with Trezor users, and they've got those lists, right? They've got a list of Coinbase users. They've got a list of Trezor users, and they're sending out these emails, phishing emails, to say, hey, we know you've connected your Trezor wallet in the past, and there's an issue, there's an error, and they've created with AI, they've created a lot of really convincing content to convince the person that they basically need to send a transaction. And once the person connects their hardware wallet and they have the attacker on the phone, the attacker is purporting to be a Coinbase employee. They have, you know, an American accent. Not sure if that's AI or not, but it's an American accent. And once you connect your Trezor to the computer and you've given the Coinbase rep, I don't know if it's access or they're running some script, but essentially once you connect the hardware wallet, it signs a transaction and wipes your wallet. The person that was attacked actually lost 100 Bitcoin, which again, these things really surprise me that they're still going on, that people fall for this stuff. But it is not knowing how things work and also being duped by technology, and these guys are taking advantage. So if you've done business on these exchanges, if you've ordered a hardware wallet from companies like Ledger, Trezor, that have been infiltrated. You were on a list as a previous customer. Beware. I would, I almost think it's like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? If you ever watched that show, I didn't watch it too much, but I did. I do remember there was this thing where you could phone a friend, and I just think before you do anything, before you act on any of these things, it'd really be good to get the advice of someone else. It's almost like out of band authentication. Like somebody else who could objectively just look at the situation and be like, no, you're stupid. Hang up the phone. Don't call them back. You know, wipe your computer. You should have, your keys protected offline in a air gap device, not one that you can connect to your computer like a Trezor or a Ledger. And, anyway, I just wanted to tee that up. I know we just have a few minutes left, but wanted to get your guys' thoughts and make sure people are aware that this stuff is going on. I don't think we could bring this stuff up enough because as people listen to this space, you know, we don't want people to lose all their hard-earned sats that they've been stacking and sacrificing for due to some stupid decision. And I don't know about you, but 100 Bitcoin at this point would be life-changing money. And some people are just trying to get 0.1 Bitcoin, let alone 1 Bitcoin or 100 Bitcoin. And so, yeah, I just think that it's a terrible situation. But again, I wanted to bring it up here at the end. So people, one, hear what's going on, and two, can kind of look out for these scams. No matter how convincing these you know, screens that might be coming up in front of you and how legit, like you don't want to let your guard down, even if you do think it is an employee of one of these companies that you've done business with. And so I'll leave it there. Maybe Coleman wants to chime in. Neil, BFP, anybody else here at the end, we can add you up here to the stage if you hit that microphone button. Would love to kick this around with people for the next like 5 or so minutes, and then we'll close it out for the week.
I'll go first and say do not use Coinbase. They're a trash coin casino, and that's just my opinion. And Ledger and Trezor, I would steer clear. Go with Seed Center or Cold Card.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, you know, this emphasizes just the knowledge part and like understanding what you're doing and getting smart and proficient with everything. And like, if you're, you know, first onboarding and you, you know, I don't care how anybody onboards, if they need to, you know, use some, you know, company third party to help them get in, like I think it's better just to get in at all than just be on the sidelines. But understanding that like that's like a temporary thing and you need to level up, you need to get smart. And you know, unless you're prompting things, like I don't know, like I just instantly would just delete it. Like if it's really important, I mean they'll actually get, you know, get in touch with you somehow. But I mean, you know, when you have your stuff in cold storage, like you're not going to get an email, you know, saying you need to enter your seed phrase or move your coins or something like that. Like once you're set up, I mean, you're set. So.
Yeah, this was an older Trezor. It was the Model T with the touch screen, I guess. And so that was important to me to understand because I do think that there have been some hacks or scripts that can automate the signing function. And so, yeah, as we fill in the details here, I mean, I think you guys are giving good points. Did want to say good morning to Rico. Thanks for joining us from France, but go ahead, BFP.
Yeah, I just want to say you also need to keep up with things. Just like you prune your garden or you prune your stock portfolio, you know, you have to pay attention to these cold storage devices. And if something is, you know, hackable, you want to switch to a different cold storage model, or, you know, the whole quantum computer nonsense, you know, if that ever takes hold, you gotta pay attention to your net worth or your money. It's your lifeblood, your time and energy in abstract form. So that's all.
Yeah, I could second that really quick. And well, what's up, Bob? What's up, everybody on the stage? Anybody in the audience? Thanks for having me. Yeah, Bitcoin's like, you have to go to source. It's a base layer, meaning you have to take responsibility for your finances. It's as close as you're going to get on an international, like, settlement layer. So yeah, I wanted to just say, yeah, exchanges right now, they're looking to get your Bitcoin. The rise of wrench attacks. I mean, this is when popularity of Bitcoin and adoption is happening. So yeah, I reckon everybody should understand that, like, this is responsibility of your own finances. And, it's a new way of thinking. Like, Bitcoin is literally a new school of thinking, and a lot of people aren't used to being responsible. So yeah, I think we really need to, and it has to do with everything, all your actions, all your thoughts, your inputs, your outputs, like, take responsibility.
Yeah, it's again, we say this stuff when we hear about it, but it's a big reason why I think a lot of people are afraid to self-custody. They don't understand how this stuff works, probably don't have the time to do it, and want to make sure they don't make a mistake. It is sad because, you know, we've been talking about it, right? Paper Bitcoin summer. It's not your Bitcoin until you have it in self-custody. And so we would encourage it. Just make sure you're doing it in a safe way. There's great tools out there. Once you understand the basics, it's not that difficult. I think the key is that what Rico said, others have said all along the way, it is, and Texas Toast says this too, it's radical responsibility. So you really do have to be on your toes. You have to be thinking about it and continually learning. BFP, see your hand again, sir.
My bad, it's not up there. Sorry.
All right, before we close out, I'm going to then give us one of these. But I do want to thank everybody for coming up today. It was a fun Friday. I know it was kind of a free-for-all. We're just kind of kicking around topics. Really enjoyed kind of where we went with things. Maybe not the most exciting Friday, but hey, we're all on the right side of the ground. And so thankful to have you guys listening. People come up on stage. We're going to do this again next week, 10 a.m. Eastern on Monday. And as always, thank you guys for coming. I'm going to hop to another meeting. So I'm going to close it out with just Sailor here real quick for you guys.
People that use fiat currency as a store of value, we call them poor.